Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
In 1960, only 25% of couples were dual-income couples. That 25% has more than doubled now. Over 60% are dual-income couples. And there are a lot of benefits that derive from that. Both people end up getting the psychic and financial rewards of remunerative work. Their kids get to see role models of both parents being able to work, both genders, if it's a heterosexual couple. But there are challenges. What about jealousy? If one person's making more money than the other or has a higher status job, it's put in your face every day, seeing the difference if, say, one is a veterinarian and the other is an administrative assistant. What about the fact that very often if both people are working, it's likely that one is going to have to travel for a week at a time or longer or even permanently. The job is so seductive that they decide, okay, we'll live apart and get together maybe on weekends or whatever. That brings challenges. What about division of labor? It's hard enough. Couples fight about it all the time. But when you've got both people working, should it be divided 50-50? Or is there another way? Should it depend on the kind of work? The challenges of dual-income couples. Who better to discuss this with than the person whom I have a dual-income couple relationship with? Dr. Barbara Nemko. I will dispense with all the congratulatory stuff. I'll just say multi-award-winning, nationally known school superintendent, Dr. Barbara Nemko, and my wife. We've been together 42 years, 40 of official marriage. Dr. Barbara Nemko, welcome. Thanks for coming
in. Good morning.
Okay. So I thought it would be fun and also more, it's easier to listen to. If we create a hypothetical couple, we don't want to be just talking about us. We can probably inject a little of ourselves in, but let's not make it focus on us. A hypothetical couple and the various challenges that they face as a dual-income couple will make one a veterinarian. Indeed, today, 83% of all veterinary students are women, so we'll make the veterinarian a woman. And she is in a long-term relationship, marriage, it almost doesn't matter, but a long-term live-in relationship with an administrative assistant, and we will, for argument's sake, make this heterosexual, we'll make him a guy. And there are issues. We'll take them one at a time, and let's kick around what we think the wisest solution, or where we don't know, we can acknowledge that and just say, who knows, it's going to depend on the couple. Sound good, or do you have any questions, comments, criticisms, Barb?
Well, let's see where it goes.
Okay. So let's say that the veterinarian, as they often do, not always, but makes significantly more money than the administrative assistant. And the administrative assistant's partner, once says, we've had this furniture for 8 years. I really think we could use it. We could freshen things up. Let's get new furniture. And it will cost about $10,000, which is typically what it costs to redo the furniture in a house. And the veterinarian says, damn it. We've got plenty. The furniture is perfectly lovely. Just because you want to freshen up, go get some flowers. And he says, I'm making a lot. Or she, of course. We're saying she is a veterinarian. I make three times as much as you do. Shouldn't I have some power over what purchases we make and what seems as silly?
That would be the first huge mistake. I think in an unequal financial situation, the last thing that the higher earner wants to do is bring that up and throw that in the face of this person that she supposedly loves to make him feel insignificant and less important. I think you want to talk about, is it time to get new furniture? That's a perfectly reasonable discussion to have, and to have a discussion about how much it will cost and what are their savings and what are their long-term goals. But not to in any way inject, shouldn't I have more power because I'm better than you are, which is what it sounds like.
Well, is there not an argument that could be made for the person who is making more money, and generally, now while there's always exceptions, generally with more money comes more stress, longer work hours, and is it not possible for this veterinarian to say to her partner, you know, I work 60 hours a week. I had to go to vet school for a million years. I deferred gratification. I got to deal with patients who are dying all the time and grieving parents and the ones who are coming in and they say, we need $10,000 worth of surgery for this dog and they can't afford it and they have to put the dog down. I live under enormous stress. Do I not accrue some greater control over the funding, the spending decisions in our household than you who's got a 9-to-5 administrative assistant job?
No.
Okay, so why?
In fact, it's likely if they are a married couple, let's insert some children into the mix. And so the administrative assistant not only has the stress of getting to work every day, but the stress of taking care of the kids. Let's assume that they're already school age. You have to get them ready in the morning. The minute kids wake up, they start with the questions. Mommy, 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 daddy, daddy. Why is this? Why is that? She touched me. He poked me. He did. So I'm in an equally, in fact, more stressful environment than you are because you're going to deal with the couple that is bringing in their dog. And yes, that's stressful. But then they leave and you have some quiet time before the next family comes in with their pet. I'm the one who is home most of the time. You travel a lot. So I'm living with this furniture and it bothers me. And so I don't think that you should have more power over whether or not we buy the furniture. It shouldn't be a power decision. It should be a strictly what makes sense financially for us as a family.
I'm not sure everybody is necessarily equal. Let's say, for example, you know, we could argue forever. I want to take one more shot. I really think that some stay-at-home parents, we're talking about somebody who's working as well, but parenthood, I believe, and I know when you go and you see the grandkids, it can be you see the children as challenging, but I really sense that many parents are the moments of stress of saying stop poking or eat your peas or whatever. Those stresses, especially when you mention school-age kids where the moms or dads who are the stay-at-home parent has got hours of, you know, of time without the kids. And, yeah, a parent has hours without the kids.
But now you're saying it's a stay-at-home parent.
But no, no, I didn't. I'm deliberately not. But we're talking about the period. You were comparing the stress of the parenting component with the stress of the veterinarian. And I think that that is oversold. In terms of the domestic chores, during those hours when either party's not working, but if one partner is working longer hours, we're talking about this veterinarian working 60 hours a week, and this other person has got a more 9-to-5 job, that discretionary different hours in spending, whether it be cooking or cleaning, or very often kids are in their room watching TV or in school, or, yes, the stress of telling him, stop fighting with Johnny. I really think that in the equation of fairness, that parenting has been given overweight in terms of how demanding it really is compared to the stresses of, and forget about even a veterinarian. If I am your typical middle manager in a nonprofit or for-profit, I've got to meet my quota for fundraising or for sales or marketing. I'm a marionette. I have no control. One thing we know about stress is that one of the major causes of stress is lack of control. And when at home working in the parenting role or the homemaker role without kids, you're the emperor or empress of your dominion. Whereas if you're working in an organization, you've got coworkers who may have their jobs protected or lazy and you can't get rid of them. You've got bosses who may make unrealistic expectations for what you're expected to do. You're a marionette. You've got legal constraints. You are a marionette, and that causes a lot of stress. So I think one of the implicit issues here is that I think that the working spouse, either gender, of course, either sexual orientation, I think the amount of stress that they get in the typical workplace is underestimated relative to the net stress. If I attached a meter, a stress meter, to somebody during the hours in which they are doing the domestic chores, including the cooking, the cleaning, the parenting, etc. And I had a stress meter attached to the person who during those hours is working those, say, 50 hours, 50 or 60. I would bet a lot of money that person's stress meter would be higher working those 40, working hours 50 to 60 compared to domestic. What do you think?
Well, I'm dying to know where you put those kids. And here is this domestic goddess in the house doing these chores without kids. Typically, the person, the administrative assistant, is working 9 to 5 or some part of that, most of that. The kids are only in school until 3 o'clock, then they're in daycare. So the minute you get out of your job, you are racing, talk about stress, to pick up the kids. And these days, you can't be a minute late because then they start charging you the big bucks to ensure that all parents pick up their kids on time. So now you're picking up one or two or three cranky, tired kids who have been in school since early in the morning and have been in extended daycare. And you're racing to get there and to park the car and to get in and to sign them out and to make sure that they brought their backpacks and they have their lunch boxes with them and getting them into the car while they may be fighting and carrying on. And now you have to get them home and you've got to get some kind of dinner on the table while they are still doing whatever they're doing. Mommy, mommy, what about this? What about that? You have to check their homework, feed them, get them in their baths, get them into bed, then clean up the kitchen, prepare lunch for the next day. I'd much rather be in an office. Way easier. Yes, office, when you're working, it's stressful. But at least you're working with adults who, while they may be demanding and difficult, are somewhat more rational than the typical kids who are having a fight over nothing.
I don't want to we're going to be beating a dead horse. I'll just make one more brief comment about this. I think you're highlighting, you know, this notion of constant fighting, constant attention, you know, and how stressful on that stress meter. Yes, if somebody's got to pick up their kid at 5 o'clock, yes, you've got to be there. Yes, you've got to prepare some kind of dinner or order pizza or make a simple salad or broiled chicken or whatever it is. It isn't as stressful as very often the pressures where you have no control over the situation at work. And how much time do kids spend doing their homework, watching TV, playing video games, being with their friends? It's not all screaming, mommy, mommy, fight, fight, fight. I think you're overstating the net stress of the parenting relative to the stresses in the workplace. And so coming full circle, the argument therefore is if they are in our hypothetical example, the veterinarian who we're calling a woman who's got to work 60 hours and is really telling people that their patient is dying or seeing a dying dog or that they've got to spend $10,000 or the dog is going to die. I mean, that's a big part of veterinary stuff. And if, you know, that is more stressful than saying, Johnny, you must eat your peas. I just think that's
we'll respectfully agree to disagree. Okay. Having done both, I disagree.
And that is part of what Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco is about. We like to think that we don't have any a priori rules, upfront rules. We try to do the best we can to present multiple sides of hard issues that relate to the workplace, hopefully for your benefit. That's why we do this. And we just rarely, twice a year, we have to come to you, not you, Barbara, but you, my dear listeners, for whom, really, you're very special to me and you're very important to me. We come to you and we need to ask for your support for public radio. I feel the need to say we do not get paid a penny, but it does cost a lot of money to run a radio station, so twice a year we must humbly come to you. So if you find Work with Marty Nemco and public radio, KELW in specific, or just public radio in general, of value to you, this is the only time, not next week, not next month, not the month after, this 1 hour that we are on the air is the time that you can vote for Work with Marty Nemco and say that it adds something to your life. And the basic membership, I think, is $75, but we try to incent you a little bit to, if you can afford it, to pay a little more. Two things we offer. First, I should give out the phone number in case you're already moved to call. 1-800-525-9917. That's 1-800-525-9917. And we do have these two incentives. Barbara, why don't you tell us about the two things that we are offering Do you remember?
Well, I know one of the things we're offering is if you wanted to have a party at your house with a show, we have a wonderful show called Odd Man Out that we have done publicly about four or five times so far to standing ovations every time. It's a really interesting story of someone who feels that they're kind of odd, and all the trials and tribulations that a person who feels odd goes through in a lifetime. People love the show. It's entertaining. It's funny. It's got music. And for $500, we will do the show for you at your own home for as many people as you care to invite.
Yeah.
And you'll know that you're doing something to support KALW and non-commercial radio.
1-800-525-9917. I should make clear, the odd man is me. It is my one-man
show. I bet they figured that out.
Well, I just...
They know you for a long time.
People listen with one ear, and so it is my story. You know, we are not our Facebook profiles. We tend to present this very puffy image of ourselves, but there is a darker side, a more interesting side, perhaps, which I tell in story, song, and piano playing, and piano accompanying a world-class singer who will be joining us, and my wife, Barbara Neville, comes in to fire me about four or five times during the show. So you will find it entertaining. You can do it at your home, a community room, any venue you want, and as many people as you want to invite. It needn't be a party if that overwhelms you. All the notion is that for $500, Barbara and me and a world-class singer will do a full hour and 45-minute performance of the show Odd Man Out that has been done at the San Francisco Civic Center and other nice venues. Only is $500 a good feeling of supporting. Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. KALW, the phone number. What, you're making a face.
1-800. No, I just wanted to suggest that they're taking care of a lot of social obligations in one fell swoop by inviting everybody to this show.
It's a fair point. 1-800-525-9917. That's 1-800-525-9917. And if 500 is a bit steep, I fully understand that. By the way, there's only two. We are making that available to only two people. So after, and I promise, there won't be more. So, you know, if you think you might want to do this, this is the time to call, because there's only two, we're going to only do it for two folks. And the other thing, but if you don't have a 500, I certainly understand that you feel like you want to contribute to KALW and work with Marty Nemko. For $100, you will get a signed copy of my brand new second edition of The Best of Marty Nemko, which is my best 66 articles of the over, I can't believe I'm saying this, my over 3,000 nationally published articles that I've written. Barbara, you want to say anything about that, or should we go back to
Yes, this is the only show where you can get free career help. You can call in and get a 3-minute career makeover. You can get advice on how to negotiate a higher salary, how to negotiate a change in your job responsibilities so that it's more in line with what you really like to do and what you're best at doing, and maybe a way of kind of offshoring locally some of the things that you don't like to do that are currently in your job description. So that's a savings right there of whatever career counselors charge per hour, $150 or more.
And whether or not you need the career counseling yourself, it's if you feel it's important in this era of the gig economy, of a falsely misleading low unemployment rate, because the underemployment rate is huge, and you like the idea of contributing to a service where we provide it for free, it's 1-800-525-9917. That's 1-800-525-9917. Or you can go to KALW.org, KALW.org. And now let's keep it short and let's go back to the program.
Yeah, so I just wanted to conclude the issue of wanting new furniture, which is where we started in this discussion.
For a dual-income couple where one person in the couple makes much more money than the other.
I think
works longer hours.
Any discussion like that should have to do with the family finances and how combined family finances should be spent and joint decision-making. And once you pull the power card, you're in for a fight.
Okay, let's change to a different element of the two-income couple. I think the most common one, of course, is division of household chores. And so the standard that we always hear is 50. We should strive toward 50-50. And now here I think it's appropriate that we talk about you and I. We do not do that. We have what we call a bailiwick system, which has worked very well for the 40 years we've been together. You want to describe the bailiwick
system? Absolutely. I have zero desire or ability to do gardening work. I hate it. I don't like to do the taxes. There are lots of things that relate to household stuff that I don't want to do that you're frankly way better at it than I am. And so the things I do like to do, and I say it unashamedly, I like to cook. I find it fun. I can putter around in the kitchen while watching a good movie on television and create a dinner that I find delicious because I chose the recipe, I chose the ways to doctor it, and it's fun to have people over for dinner, not all the time, but frequently, and serve a dinner that everybody says, wow, that's delicious, and can I have the recipe? So I would no more let you cook than I would try to fly off the roof to China on my own without a plane.
What's more mysterious is that you like cleaning. I mean, you really seem like in a Zen state when you with a sponge in your hand. So again, I hate cleaning. It's something I don't like to do. But I, you know, and while I hate doing the taxes, it's something I can do. I also don't mind negotiating with big purchases and getting the right vendors.
Oh, right.
Like
I would
that.
No more buy a car without you doing all the research for me and doing all of the negotiating on the price of the car than, again, the flying.
Right, but the operative phrase here is that we take dominion over our various activities, and we are not obsessed with this 50-50 thing, which keeps the marriage healthy. Barbara is clear, you know, we divide things up and we feel a certain pride that we have dominion over the things we tend to do better. And also just in general, like any other workplace, the home is a workplace essentially, and you want to have the people who doing the things that they do best and like doing. And so we at least like to suggest to you, dear listeners, that rather than the oft-offered idea that we should strive to 50-50, sit down and look at all the tasks that life needs to be done. And, of course, it doesn't matter what your gender or your sexual orientation is.
Or how much money you make.
I do believe that the person who works longer hours with more stress and brings more money should accrue more power.
Right, but we disagree on who that person is.
Well, you know, let's take certainly the stay-at-home person who has no children. Where there's some confounding with the children thing, because we're arguing about which is more stressful, being a veterinarian or being the parenting. But I have many clients who are stay-at-home people who have, where the other person is a beast of burden, male or female, making all of the, working all those hours under that stress, and yet, paradoxically, the person who is not the income earner, the stay-at-home person, is the one who likely wants to buy more stuff that is not essential. And that, to me, is, you can hear it in my voice, that there's a cosmic injustice about that. Do you agree?
Yes, if somebody voluntarily chooses to stay home and not work, then I think they have less say over how the money gets spent. Because if they really wanted to buy something new, they can go out and do some work. If there are children involved or there are disabilities and whatever, and they can't.
Of course.
But someone who is voluntarily just staying home, yes, that's the one time that I would say there might be some discussion about, I earn the money, and no, you don't get to spend it all.
Okay. Let's turn to another element of this. Another problem with working couples, of course, is they're going to have less time to spend with each other. And so the point I'd like to make, and I'd like to get your reaction to, is I think in some sense, especially if you are not 20 or 30, we still live somewhere in the recesses of our mind is the Warden June Cleaver 1950s, where your life is enmeshed with each other almost totally. And for the dual income couple, especially if both people are working full time, that's just unrealistic because, you know, if you're working full time, your spare time may not be at the same time, your energy level. You might on a Wednesday night be free and want to do something, and I might not be free either temporarily or just I'm not exhausted until Saturday morning. So it seems to me the key to the successful two-income relationship is to not expect so much of your life to revolve around each other and to not be possessive. And so what are your thoughts about that?
I would agree. I think that typically younger and newer couples have that urge to spend more and more time together. And then after you've spent decades together, that is no longer the driving force. But I think if there is a need to do that, it is true, you do need to schedule that. You've got to figure out when is the time that your energy levels and time off converge, and decide what it is that you'd like to do during that time and make that a joyful time.
That suggests the, you know, the stand, again, I'm always a little nervous about giving advice that's been given for a long time. So I'm a little nervous about the standard advice, which is, why don't you set up, you know, romantic Tuesdays, you know, where every Tuesday night at 9 o'clock, we're not going to do anything, no TV. We're going to get in bed and we're going to hang out.
Well, I didn't say that.
Asking what you think about the schedule. I mean, that's the standard advice, to schedule it, you know, on a regular basis. Like, so it's like a dentist appointment. You don't miss it. What do you think about that idea?
I think that's ridiculous, because you can't necessarily say that every Tuesday night at 9 o'clock you're going to be free to, or even want to do something.
It's too rigid.
But I think you can look at the week ahead and say, let's see what this week looks like on your schedule and my schedule, and what do we think, where do we think we might have some overlapping time, and what would we like to do with that? Mm-hmm. Do we want to go bowling? Do we want to watch television? Do we want to make love? Do we want to go out to eat? What do we want to do? And then try to, if you can hold on to that time, that's not the best time for one spouse to say to the other, well, my friend just called and I think I'm going to go to the movies with my friend. There has to be some prioritizing of the relationship, but you can't just say it's going to be this time all the time.
You know, one of the advantages, though, one of the advantages of not having to do all of your recreation, if you will, together, is that obviously people are different. I think it's appropriate to bring up us as an example. The two things you love that I don't like are dancing and travel. And so you dance with, you go out occasionally. When you go, you go to conferences, you're making a face. You go dancing.
I mean, if they happen to have dancing and I'm at the conference, yes, I will go dancing.
Right, and you'd love to travel. And so you will do discretionary, you know, you do a lot of travel for work. But even if there's discretionary, you're talking about going with Travis Rogers with the Napa Choir to Scotland. And I have no interest in going. And, you know, it is... being too possessive in a relationship is really evil. It really does hurt the relationship, because all it is it makes people want to pull more. So I encourage you to go. So that's one of the advantages of not insisting you be so enmeshed. You've got the freedom to pursue the things that you want to do. You're not just a clone of your partner.
100% agree,
Miracle.
Dr. Nemko.
Okay, so let's take one more example. This is a little less common, but it's kind of interesting. Back to our example of the veterinarian who is, let's say, married or long-term relationship with an administrative assistant. Now, very often, veterinarians have a hard time. There's so many veterinarians. They have a hard time making a living with one location. So they often have to have two locations. So they may have, you know, one that's in San Jose and one that's in San Francisco. And because the commutes are getting ever crazier, and to get, let's say, I'm just picking an example, let's say they live in Pinole, and to get from San Jose to Pinole, you know, is crazy. So they may, the person in the vet may stay in San Jose for two or three nights a week. And let's take your kid's example. And she comes home, and now this admin, who is her spouse, has set up a routine for those two or three days about how to parent. Let's say that admin, for argument's sake, is very nuanced and fairly laissez-faire, and there isn't a rigid dinner time, and you're more inclined to give in when the kid wants to do something. And then the vet is exhausted, comes home, and she thinks that's terrible parenting and there needs to be limits. And so she now insists, you know, we're having dinner at 6 o'clock and this is it. And the kids get angry, and they play off one parent against the other. Now, there is a two-parent income, a two-working couple income. How might that get dealt with so that the kids aren't getting having these two different sets of rules for parenting and no fighting about who's right? What are your thoughts?
Probably the hardest part of parenting, even if they are not living apart at any point during the week, even when they're both home most nights, when parents can't agree on the rules of parenting, it's not good for, it's very bad for the relationship, and it's not good for the kids either. So whether it's classes, books, counseling, something, parents really need to sit down when they have some quiet time, get a babysitter, go out to dinner, and sit down quietly and really talk about who's going to give what in terms of their opinions. If one is more routinized and wants things to happen in a certain way, and the other is more free-for-all, kids don't know what to expect. And that's a terrible thing. Plus, they see their parents glaring at each other because one is saying this and one is saying that. And kids are really wily. They will pit you against each other. And so mom says this, they run to dad. Or dad says that, they run to mom. Parenting is one of the hardest and most stressful things on a relationship, particularly when on top of it, both people are working.
As an example of radio verite, we were talking about couples in which one has to travel a lot. As it happens, Barbara, you have to get on a plane right now. I wish you a lovely trip and make a good speech in Denver.
Thank you.
And,
Salt Lake City, but who's counting?
Right. We'll talk tonight.
Okay.
I love you.
Bye-bye. Love you, too.
Bye. Okay. And I believe, when I use the term dear listeners, I use it all the time, it may seem saccharine, but you are very dear to me. You're a very important part of my life. And so it almost hurts me a little bit to have to come to you for money, because it's a privilege to be doing this for you. And now, in addition, I'm asking you for money. I'm asking you not on my behalf, of course. I don't get paid for this. It's my privilege to do this. But it is expensive to run a radio station. And so twice a year, and I swear to you, dear listeners, this is the only time, this right now, this between now and the end of the show, today, that when you can pledge, and if you really want to support Marty and Emco, of course you can support KALW by donating at any time. But if you'd like to simultaneously support KALW and work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko, of course, this is a great time, because each dollar you do donate is a vote of support for work with Marty and Barbara. And I deeply appreciate it. It just feels good to get that kind of attaboy. So basic membership, $75. You get some stuff, which they'll tell you about. It's like you get on the mailing list, get newsletters and other thank you gifts and stuff. But at $100, you get a autographed copy of my latest brand new book, second edition of The Best of Marty Nemko, which is my best 66 of 3,000 articles. About a third of them are about career. Some of them are about relationships. Some are about men's issues. Some are about reinventing America. And they've gotten really wonderful Amazon reviews, so I'm kind of proud of it. So the phone number, 1-800-525-9917. I'd really appreciate it. 1-800-525-9917. Lovely volunteers. Be happy to answer your questions and take your money. Credit cards are fine, etc. Or if you'd rather not talk to our kind volunteers, you can go to KALW.org. And the piece de resistance, the real incentive that I'd like to offer you to donate, if you're in a position to donate to KALW a little more or a lot more, I am privileged to have created a one-man show that has done very well. It's called Odd Man Out, and it is about my story, that beneath the pretty positive public perception that people have, I've had many failures, and I think people learn more from failure stories than success ones, but people are always so interested in puffing themselves. So this show that I created, Odd Man Out, with my stories, but also playing the piano and some songs, with the help of Barbara Nemko, my wife, who comes in to fire me about four times during the show, is something I can do for you. I think it's cheap, a mere $500. You can invite as many people as you want to your home. We could even do it at my home, up to 30, up 25. And we will do the show for you. It's an hour and 45 minutes, songs, stories, and we really have gotten a standing ovation every time. And it's a great way, as Barbara says, to fill your social obligation. And so for $500, you get the good feeling of really supporting Work with Marty Nemko, 500 votes for Work with Marty Nemko, and KALW Public Radio, 1-800-525-9917. That's 1-800-525-9917. The last thing I want to say about that is I'm obviously not giving an unlimited number, though. I'm the total of two people. I will do the show for up to two people. And as I said, either at my place or yours, as they say. My place will only hold about 25. Yours can be as many as you want. And so let's go back to programming. As I promised in the promos for this week, one of the hardest tasks that a career counselor faces is helping people change careers at after age 50. It's just, you know, I probably don't need to explain why, but it really, really is hard for people to change careers because normally it requires new training. And so you go through this training, even if it's not a degree program, even if it's just a certificate that takes a year or for something, you know, you're now a 50 or 60-year-old newbie with no experience and merely just training. You're not exactly likely to be the most hireable person. And so not easy. And what I've done in preparation for the show, I reviewed all my clients and came up with one who made a career change that's realistic. It's not what I call the Oprah phenomenon, where they suddenly got this amazing super job, but it's a real-life person who's, I'll be honest, she's over 60. And she made what ended up being a successful career change in her life. Interestingly, she said that her life, when she had this big job before she got fired for a second time in a row, was a six. And in her new job and life, it's a seven. And that's not bad for people who had to make a career. She had to make a career change. So here is the story. And I'm going to change, of course, I'm going to change some details to protect her anonymity, but the story is absolutely true. Trudy, not her real name, had been an executive for leading nonprofits. And she admitted that in her late 50s, her performance started to decline. And she was let go from her position. And so, no surprise, she was ecstatic that at age 62, she landed another executive position. Unfortunately, a year later, she was fired again. The precipitating incident was her overreacting to a supervisee, but her boss later told her, she hit her right between the eyes. She said, "Trudy, that was just the last straw." Of course, she was devastated. She said, "I fired for my last two jobs, high-level jobs, and 62? I'm going to be a bag lady." She also said she said, which is, "I'm overweight, in addition, and we do have weight bias in the society." So first, she and I discussed whether she wanted to tighten her financial belt, and she did agree. She also agreed, you know, she was the classic. She says she fills her emotional hole with shopping and overeating. She's lonely. She's single. And she decided that the biggest way she needed to tighten the belt was she lives on a $4,000 a month apartment. And she decided she'd get a roommate to live with her. She's got a new top-of-the-line Prius, and she's still paying off big time. And she's going to replace it with some old, well-checked-out, maybe 15-year-old Toyota, which still could have a lot of life left in it. She also needed to get out of the house because she was really depressed and scared. Also make some money. She also needed some structure in her life, and she wanted to have a chance of meeting a romantic partner. So she took a part-time job as a retail clerk at REI. Now, again, I'm changing details just subtly. This is not exactly the story, but it's pretty damn close. Anyway, really, she wished she could retire. She said to me a number of times, "I'm tired." But she knew that if she tried to live on her Social Security and that part-time retail gig, she would very likely run out of money. So she reached out, and this was crucial. She reached out to everyone in her network to see if she could get consulting gigs, because it's a lot easier to get a job when you're being hired only for a couple of months. When you're hiring somebody full-time, especially if they're over 60, it's very hard, especially in the Bay Area, to terminate somebody. But it's easier to get consulting. And because she was an executive in the nonprofit space, it gave her a chance. The truth is, and this has happened so often, she called probably 10 people, and none of them had any leads for her. But I taught her to do the following, and this is a really useful takeaway for you, whether you're 20 or 70. She ended every conversation with her network with, "Would you keep your ears open for me? And if I'm still looking in a month, would you mind if I circled back?" Now that everybody's going to agree with, there's no problem. And so over the course of the next month, they're more likely to have heard of something, and that started a trickle of consulting work. She got a month here where she made $5,000, 2 months there for $7,500, and so on. Now, before she started that first consulting gig, she met with me, and her having been fired, the wound was, she was a little less raw, and so I felt it was time for me to ask her, okay, Trudy, are there any lessons that you want to learn from your previous two jobs that'll help ensure your success now? It came down to obvious things. Again, I don't want to make things sound like Oprah. It came down to obvious things, like she needed to maintain perspective. She has a little bit of a hothead. And she needs to also make clear that she's open to feedback so she can get that feedback early before she's developed an indelibly bad reputation. And I also suggested that she have a mole, somebody she trusts, to keep her apprised of how she's really perceived. So again, she can get that feedback early. I also suggested that she try to get ongoing feedback. I'll tell you more about that later. Anyway, those are basic, but as in real life, most of the life lessons and work lessons aren't rocket science. And again, being real here, her efforts to meet a romantic partner, even in the short term, which she was open to, failed. But with her newfound free time, she deepened relationships with her girlfriends that she had neglected, plus new relationships, friendships that she met at, she's got a dog, at dog meetups and in her consulting gigs and at REI. So she had actually a richer social life because she'd gotten that interim job doing retail. And I asked her then recently, just frankly this week, I asked her how her self-rating on the happiness scale has changed from when she had a big full-time executive job. And she said, you know, before, even when I was having the jobs, I was about a 6, and now overall I'm a 7. So here is a woman who, at 62, got fired from 2 jobs, and even though her new job, which is basically consulting, and she's making less income, but she's making enough to supplement her Social Security, etc., her life is net better. So what are the takeaways? After age 40 or 50, our self-appraisal of our competence tends to stay fixed, even if our competence has declined. That was her undoing. So if you, I don't care if you're 20 or you're 70, but if you were honestly to chart your performance, say, over the last few years, what would the trend line look like? If the trend is down, do you want to improve a skill? Do you want to change your attitude? Do you want to look for less demanding work? And if you don't know what to improve, is it time to ask trusted colleagues for feedback? It can, if you like, if they're afraid of giving it to you straight. There is a fantastic website called 15.5, the number 15 and the word 5, 15five.com, which enables them to provide anonymous feedback. By the way, normally I'd be going to the phones now, but because this is the membership drive, I've been asked to not go to the phones. So you're going to be listening to me, hopefully not boring. I've tried to prepare as much as I can so I don't bore you. But let me just take a brief moment. If you want to, this is the only time, really, 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 if you want to support Work with Marty Nemco, it's now in the next few minutes. You want to support Work with Marty Nemco and KELW, it does take money to run a radio station. If you want to support non-commercial radio, KLW in specific or public radio in general, and Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco in specific, basic membership, $75. $100, you get a signed copy of my new book, Work with Marty Nemco, The Best of Marty Nemco, second edition. And for $500, I have no idea whether there's one or two or none left, but you could call. For $500, I will do a private concert for you and as many friends as you want at your venue or up to 25 people at my own home. At a time of our mutual convenience, Odd Man Out has really gotten standing ovations each time it's been done. It is the true story of the me. We're not only what we are in our Facebook profile, stories, music, and my wife comes in to fire me. Phone number for supporting Work with Marty Nemco and KELW in this membership drive: 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. Or you can go to kalw.org. I was in the middle of telling the true story of a person we're calling Trudy and the lessons learned that may be applicable to you, especially if you're over 50, but certainly it's got generalizability beyond that. after people get fired or quote-unquote laid off, they tend to go into denial and may ironically increase their spending. Should you decrease, maintain, or increase your spending? I mean, it may seem odd for me to say that people, after they get laid off, increase their spending, but sometimes they do. Either because they're feeling so sad that they've been laid off that they want to reward themselves by spending, or I know a guy who has been so responsible his whole life. He's made good money, but all he does is saves it. He invested, he buys himself nothing. But then he got fired, and he had always loved to swim. But he rarely did because it was time-consuming to head to the club, change clothes, swim, shower, get dressed again. So when he got laid off from his most recent job, he did spend and had a swimming pool installed in his backyard, which he loves. And it's something he'd never have done had he not been terminated. So that's just an odd way of saying that sometimes your termination can be the best thing that ever happened to you, either because it frees up time to meet a romantic partner, frees you up to choose a different career, frees you up to maybe spend money that you might otherwise not have had, or be freed from the shackle of this overspending habit. Sometimes people work hard and they work to make a lot of money and they feel like they owe to themselves to buy designer label clothes and cars and vacations and jewelry, but deep down it feels empty. It's the hedonic treadmill. So sometimes being fired or laid off, especially if you're older and maybe you've accumulated a little money, can be really a plus. Another lesson that hopefully is existent in Trudy's story, often after a devastating experience like being fired, it's wisest to channel the anger and fear into some action, and that is really what I encourage Trudy to do. And sometimes it was with Trudy, it was taking a job she could get instantly, even though it paid poorly, because it did provide structure, etc. And simultaneously, and this is really true, sometimes people make the mistake of thinking, I can only work on one thing at a time. But what kept her getting out of her depression and fury and anger at having been fired and fear was not only getting the job she could get instantly, that retail job at REI, but she also simultaneously started working on losing weight and simultaneously reinvigorated her effort to meet a romantic partner. So getting super busy is often the wisest thing to do in the face of a firing, whether you're 20 or 70. Another client who was fired, she was a senior chemist for a major supermarket chain, and the next day she took a job at a Starbucks, at her favorite. Well, Starbucks was located in the local Barnes & Noble in Walnut Creek. This was years ago, so I'm not worried about her confidentiality, many years ago. Sometimes an older person, when they, like Trudy said a number of times to me in our session, she said, I feel tired. But sometimes feeling tired isn't just a manifestation of aging. Unhappiness or lack of success in a job can be like a drip-by-drip thing that just tires you little by little, even if you're 20. And even if it's a low-level job, as long as it's filled with lots of little wins, it can be restorative. So her working at REI, it wasn't actually REI, but, you know, she succeeded with nearly every customer because she was, you know, she was helpful. And that restored her self-esteem, and it just was it is buoying of you. And in fact, if you got fired and you don't need to let status drive you, some of my happiest clients have scaled down to a very simple job. I had one client who was a pharmacist and got let go. She was working at a university research pharmacist, got let go, and ended up taking a job as a delivery person. You know those delivery trucks, those emergency medical deliveries, you know, urine samples, blood samples, whatever? He was the emergency driver, and he loved it. And he would get together, there's a bunch of them who do that, and he would get together for coffee every morning with his buddies, his fellow drivers, and he loved it. So up is not the only way, and so sometimes when you're fired, if you have the money, it can, and not if you not let status to drive you, it can be very fun to have a low-pressure job that you might not otherwise take. Now, another lesson from the Trudy story is that older job seekers, of course, do have disadvantages. And it's not just a bias against wrinkles. An older person's skill set may not be up to date. Their energy level may be low. They often are expensive compared to a 20-something. It's hard for them, if they've been making six figures, to say, I'll work for $45,000. But older people do have advantages, including the one that Trudy used. They've had the time to build a network. That's crucial. Every job seeker, again, whether you're 20 or 70, but especially older ones, their first move should be to think about first the range of jobs that they would consider. The range. Notice I use the word range. Don't be too narrow, but not too wide. Don't say I'm open to anything, because then you sound like you're desperate. The range of jobs they'd consider, and then ask everyone in their professional and personal network, including distant ties, if they know somebody who might be willing to chat, that's the operative word, about possible employment in those areas. They themselves don't need to be the person who's got the job lead for you. You're asking everybody in your network if they know somebody who might be willing to chat. And importantly, as I mentioned earlier about Trudy, the first reach out to your network usually fails because it's just too unlikely that at any moment in time, someone in that network's going to have that useful lead. But your odds multiply if at the end of that reach out, you do as Trudy did, you ask, I know you have nothing now, but would you mind keeping your ears open? And if I'm still looking in a month, would you mind if I circled back? The odds are so much greater that somewhere along the line, the next month or two, they will have come across something. Now, as I alluded to earlier, motivational speakers and movies and TV shows and magazines, they live on stories, true or exaggerated, of people whose lives were zero and now are 10, at least in the over 5,000 clients I've had. That is far from a typical result, but I wanted to share with you the story of Trudy to show you the various ways in which it's possible to take a life that was a six when she was successfully employed and despite two firings in a row, now is a seven, and I'm guessing she's moving toward an eight. I want to tell you one more story of an older person who also decided to downscale and found that was actually an interesting launchpad for his job. I called a short story that I wrote. It's a composite, actually, of a couple of people. It's called The World's Oldest Busboy. Over his 31 years at the college's fundraising department, Harold advanced from volunteer coordinator to vice president of human resources. And a few days after Harold's 70th birthday, and again, this is a composite of real people but have changed details, his boss called him into her office. She said, "It's incredibly difficult for me to say this, but we need to let you go, Harold. We can get a good VP with more technical skills for much less money, which would make more funds available for programs and enable us to report lower administrative costs, which is key to getting more donations." And he remembered a line from Death of a Salesman, and he said, "You've eaten the orange, and now you're throwing away the peel. I am not a piece of fruit." And his boss got teary but would not relent. She said, "I'm sorry, I'm so sorry." Harold's wife was completely supportive for a month, but Harold couldn't make himself look for another job. Instead, he sat in his house, a house he actually was now at risk of losing, eating and drinking and then smoking some pot, which made him eat more and care less. Finally, his wife threatened, "Get a job or else, I'm serious." He got really scared and then angry. He said, "Whatever happened from rich for richer or poorer?" But Harold was scared, so right away he walked the commercial streets near his house in Palo Alto, main street, main drag, and the only help wanted sign in the store window was for a busboy in a chain restaurant. And he went in. Now, the manager was legally precluded from asking anything about his age, but he, of course, was wondering why a 70-year-old well-dressed guy, person of any gender, would want a job as a busboy. So he asked, "What makes you want this job?" And Harold answered, "Honestly, I'm afraid my wife's going to leave me if I don't get a job, and fast." And he was hired. And Harold said, "Maybe I should write to the Guinness Book of Records, world's oldest busboy." And Harold became a conversation piece for cost customers. He evoked the snickers, of course, among some people, but more often, You know, people were admiring, looked at him admiringly, said admiring things. The manager even seemed to notice an increase in the number of older customers. And after a month, Harold was promoted to waiter. And although it's against the law to consider age, the manager made a point of hiring an older person as a busser. The real surprise was Harold liked his waiter job better than his job as VP. There was a minimum bureaucracy, and he succeeded with nearly every customer, something he couldn't say about his work in fundraising. And because Harold was a bit more thoughtful in his interactions with customers than is the typical wait person, he got excellent tips. His first year, he earned more than $90,000, which a good waiter can earn. Unfortunately, Harold's back and his knees did start to bother him from standing on his feet all day. But finally, he got a bit of good luck. And indeed, frankly, the older I get, the more I realize luck matters in everything, whether it be career or, as the previous show, philosophy talk, health. Anyway, his manager left for a larger restaurant, and Harold was offered and accepted the manager job, which didn't require nonstop standing for 8 hours. Whereas Harold was a VP, he put in 60 hours a week, sometimes more. Now he puts in 40, 45, and he's done, which leaves time for his marriage, volunteer work tutoring low-income gifted kids, and his new hobby, using a music synthesizer to create orchestrations of his favorite melodies, which he posts as a podcast. The takeaways for you, my dear listeners: sometimes a serious threat is needed to break your inertia. His wife actually did him a favor by threatening to leave. Another takeaway: when adversity hits, it may, as Trudy did in the last story, be wiser to get quickly back on the bike. At least among my clients, I've found that the longer a person wallows after a setback, the harder it is to move forward. Another takeaway: even excellent employees may have to step downward, but their quality usually quickly reveals itself and, with luck, results in renewed ascendancy up the career ladder. Another takeaway: as I alluded to earlier, up isn't the only way. Some people find greater contentment in a lower status job. And finally, while age often is a minus in the workplace, it can sometimes not just be a neutral, but a plus. And now, this is the last time. We really have the last 2 minutes here. This is the twice a year I have to come to you to ask for money for KLW, not for me, for KLW. If you would like to support Work with Marty Nemco and KLW, this is your only time to do it. Basic membership, $75, 1-800-525-9917. $100, you get a copy of Work with Marty Nemco's, with The Best of Marty Nemco, my new second edition, best 66 of my articles, a lot on career, but also on relationships, health, meaning of life, 1-800-525-9917. And if you would like me to do my one-man show, Odd Man Out, interrupted by my wife, Barbara Nemco, who comes in to give me a hard time, it's gotten a standing ovation every time. For $500, you can have invite anybody you want to your home, or up to 25 people to my home, for a private performance of Odd Man Out. And I can promise you and your guests will enjoy it. It'll be a unique party. The phone number, 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. Or you can go to kalw.org. Either way. And now I just want to thank you, dear listeners, for listening to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco all these years. And whether you can afford to pledge or not, I really do honor your listenership. I also want to thank my border operator, Joanne Marr. And please join me again next Sunday at 11. I'll do workovers on callers. And the robots are coming. Whose jobs are they coming for? Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we do find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.